Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Michael Brown. Many years ago, he had a painful neurological condition called Haldon syndrome, and he suffered for years using conventional medical approaches, and then embarked on a journey to heal his experience. As a result of that, he's written books, one which we're going to discuss in some depth, called The Presence Process, and I think we're going to find it will be a very interesting program. Welcome to the program, Michael.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Fine, yes. Can we hear you okay?
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you clearly.
Right, that's fine. You've sounded for just for a moment a little bit distant there. I think it's a good place to start here by asking you if you could tell the listeners about this background that led you to going into the process, which is now the subject of your book. And I'll tell our listeners that you're a very busy man. To my counting, you've got four books at the moment. You've probably had a new one that came out in the spring, and you've got yet another one coming out in the fall. But for the moment, tell us about your background and how it led you to the position you're in now.
Okay, well, it began in the late 80s when I was in the music industry, and I suddenly one day started receiving immense amounts of severe pain on the one side of my face. And the pain was completely debilitating, and I would have these attacks that would last for about 40 minutes, and I had about up to 8 of those a day. And so I did the normal thing, which was to start looking for a physical way to solve my problem. And I tried the allopathic medical route, which was through pharmaceuticals and cortisone injections and getting my wisdom teeth removed, until I eventually got a diagnosis, which I was told I had an ailment called Haldon syndrome, which is also called Haldon's cephalgia, which to me it means we don't know what's wrong with you.
It was a neurological
no cause, no cure situation. So I had that for a long time and tried to approach it physically and had absolutely no success. And then I started to approach it mentally by looking at what I call the mental approach, which is the metaphysical approach of thinking about it and trying to understand it, and then trying things like Reiki and massage and those sorts of things. And there was a slight impact in my condition, but not very much. And it wasn't until I was introduced to the idea that underlying my condition was an emotional situation, and unless I approached that emotional component, that I wasn't going to have any success. So I became very interested in my emotional life and what that was about, and I discovered that I had a large amount of suppressed emotion within my being that I had no awareness of whatsoever. And as I began to become aware of it and learned how to integrate it, my condition started to subside to the point that it completely disappeared. But not only that, as I integrated my emotional condition or my unintegrated emotions, my entire life began to transform. And I realized that the emotional component of my experience was the causal point of my experience, and I proved that to myself by impacting it and transforming my entire experience as a human being. So that's how that journey began.
Right, yes. So how did you become aware that you had emotional problems?
Well, somebody in the mid-90s, someone pointed out to me that the emotions were the causal point of our behavior. And it was just a simple thing they showed me, that whenever we're upset about something, there's a physical circumstance There's a story we tell ourselves, but underlying that is an emotional signature. And so I became very interested in that emotional signature. And as I began to understand what the emotions are and how to impact them, my experience started to transform. So I became really curious about the role of emotions in the human experience.
Yes. Now, we're here mainly to discuss your book, The Presence Process. Now, in that, you talk about stepping beyond the victim-come-victor role. Explain a little bit about your thinking on that.
The victim and victor role? Well, the victim and victor role comes out of the idea or the perception that the world is happening to us opposed to happening through us. And this comes out of the fact that, you know, from the age of 7 onwards, our emotional body or our self-perception is shut down. We have an emotional body condition that's completely imprinted into our being by the time we're 7. And then from 7 to 14, we enter very focused mental development, or the education system, which I call the mental institution. We enter that, we become very mentally orientated, and simultaneously we shut down our emotional awareness. And from that point, from 14 years onwards, we sort of hit puberty and we go through a physiological change, and then we become very physically transfixed by the world. Everything matters to us. And by the time we're an adult, our emotional condition is no longer within our awareness. It's completely sedated and controlled out of our awareness. And so the implicit predicaments of our childhood, which we can categorize as, say, the uncomfortable ones of fear, anger, and grief, these are not in our awareness. However, they are reflected on our experience. And because we don't have self-perception and can't feel this inner circumstance, we don't have the insight, we're looking outside at the world and seeing reflections of the emotional condition. And we start to behave like someone who cleans a mirror when they try and get rid of a pimple, or who moves a radio around the room to try and change stations. In other words, we perceive our discomfort as being caused by the physical circumstances. And if we gain a little bit of awareness, we think it's because of the way we're thinking.
Yeah.
So victim and victim mentality is one in which we attempt to change the quality of our experience by impacting the physical or mental aspect of our experience.
Mm.
We only overcome victim and victim mentality when we enter the awareness of our emotional condition and take responsibility for the imprinting of our first 7 years and say, you know, I'm responsible for the quality of my life because I'm responsible for what's going on in my emotional body. Once we enter that frame of thought and that approach, we overcome the victim-victim mentality of perceiving the world happening to us and start to see how it is always happening through us.
Yeah. I think some of the experiences which have caused us hurt are probably hidden away deep in our subconscious. I would have thought that hypnotic regression would have traced those experiences, but I believe you're going to say that there is another way that you use.
Well, the imprinting of the first 7 years is done through self-perception. So it's not done through conceptualization. In other words, a three-year-old, if you ask a three-year-old who's being abandoned by their parents in that moment, for example, what they're going through, they won't say to you, I'm being abandoned by my parents. They don't have that conceptual framework. But what they will be going through is a felt experience that is deeply uncomfortable to them.
Mm.
So the initial imprinting is done through self-perception, not through conceptualization. So it's very difficult to get to those initial imprints through the concepts of words, through talking about it, through understanding, through telling the stories, because storytelling is part of the magic that we're taught when we go to school. But that's not really how the imprinting is embedded. It's embedded purely through feelings. And these uncomfortable feelings are always with us. We just don't realize that when we're going through our daily experience or we're going through our life experiences, whenever we get upset in any way, what's happening is it's this felt experience that's imprinted rising up into our awareness. But because we don't have that insight, we see it happening in the world outside of us. So
yeah.
The way to get at it is to get in touch with the feeling body, to stop trying to feel better and rather get better at feeling. And so, you know, once we are able to enter that feeling body and feel the authentic condition, then we can start to integrate it. But it's not, it doesn't really require understanding what's going on in order to bring resolution to it. In fact, understanding is a trap in bringing resolution.
Yeah. I believe your ideas focus on what you call the now, instead of, as you term it, living in time. And you talk of people that may be relentlessly running from yesterday and frantically chasing tomorrow. And because of that, they don't get any rest or peace. But your book and the process, the present process, you believe addresses and soothes those conditions. So perhaps you'd like to talk a little about that.
Yes. The now is not really my language. I prefer present on to awareness. The now is more the language of Eckhart Tolle. The vocabulary I prefer is present moment awareness. And present moment awareness is really, it's not a state other than being completely aware of what's happening to me in the moment. So if I'm feeling annoyed, then I allow myself to feel very present and aware of that experience. And that brings me into present moment awareness. One of the problems that we have or challenges we have is this feeling that the feelings that are imprinted into us in the first 7 years, and we're particularly focusing on the uncomfortable ones, not the pleasant ones, because the pleasant ones don't drive us into sedation and control behavior. But the
right.
feelings that are imprinted into us in the first 7 years are deeply unconscious, deeply uncomfortable to us. Those fear, angers, and griefs that we go through in childhood, And also those feelings that are in our parents, because it doesn't necessarily have to be things that happen to us. It can just be the energies that are around us. If my mother is a woman who's constantly in great grief, I don't have to be in grief to receive that from her, for example.
No.
So these impact our emotional body by the time we're 7. And what happens is this discomfort is drawing on our attention. We're trying to integrate it. We're trying to bring that back to, you can think of as a way to integrate it. And so that's dragging our awareness out of this moment that we're in. Also, we're spending a lot of time in this moment that we're in trying to sedate and control that experience or those discomforts. So a lot of our energy is not available for the moment we're in. And as we go and integrate these childhood experiences, that attention, that energy becomes available now to us in the moment, and we can think of that we become more present and more aware in the moment we're in, instead of, you know, being in this distracted state. The time-based state is really arises out of what happened yesterday and how can I stop this happening to me again tomorrow. And that behavior is coming out of this initial imprinting that every human being goes through in the first 7 years of their life experience.
Yeah. Let me quote a bit from one of your excerpts.
Right.
You said, the only way we can authentically change our world experience is by liberating ourselves from the perceptual virus of time, and that liberating ourselves from this mental disease is therefore the greatest act of service we can perform right now. But perhaps you'd like to explain that a little bit further.
Right. You know, that really comes out of my very first, what I would call, present moment experience, where I had an experience where I was able to be completely present. And what I saw was that I was never really here. I never really showed up in my life. In fact, as a younger person, when I was in the music industry and, you know, being a teenager, I found that most of my behavior was focused on trying to get out of it. You know, we had that saying, oh, you're trying to get out of it. Whether it was taking substances that I could get out of it. Or, you know, even the first book that fascinated me was Charles Billets' Bermuda Triangle, about, you know, a place on the world where things disappear. And that fascinated me because I think I wanted to disappear. And then I became interested in UFOs because I was looking for someone to save me from this world and take me somewhere else. And I found that all my behavior was really based on trying to get out of the experience that I was having. And when I had this present moment awareness experience in which I became fully present, mentally clear, I had an experience of complete emotional integration, I realized suddenly that my task in being in this world was not to get out of it, but actually arrive here as fully as possible. And then it became curious to me of why I couldn't show up in the moment. And of course, that's when I became aware of the emotional condition that was drawing on my attention. And so for me, the greatest quest that I could take was to show up in this moment. And I think many of the choices we are making in this world that are causing us suffering are made out of the fear, anger, and grief that are that have been passed from generation to generation to generation. They're not being made out of what's actually going on in the moment. They're almost being made out of memory banks that are unresolved memories. And so we're making them out of fear, out of anger, and out of grief. And any choice made out of fear, anger, and grief, because that's the causal point, always leads us into deeper fear, anger, and grief. And so I saw that one of my greatest tasks for myself would be to integrate those experiences so that I was making choices out of what was actually happening in the moment and not what the moment was mirroring for me about the past or some projected future.
Yes. At the moment, I believe quite a lot of people, including myself, believe that we're entering a period when ascension is possible. And you're actually mentioning the present moment awareness of something that is an inevitable consequence of our accelerating evolution. Do you put the two things together?
Yes, I'm also one that, from my own insights, believe that we've entered a window of opportunity. And to me, I also think of it as the harvest, when the wheat is being separated from the chaff. And what is going to me, separate the one from the other is revolutionary behavior from evolutionary behavior. And revolutionary behavior is when we use the same means that we perceive to be oppressing us to try and liberate ourselves. In other words, if I've been oppressed by violence, I use violence to liberate myself. And I become violent, and then people underneath me need to, you know, overcome me. So evolutionary behavior is really different. And what I see, you know, I'll just place this for the listener. When we enter this world, we move along a pathway of awareness. Where first 7 years of our life is emotional, and then we enter schooling, we enter 7 years of intense mental development, then we go through puberty, and then we enter very physical in interaction with the world, we take on our physical roles and physical responsibilities. So we see this pathway going from the emotional through the mental and into the physical. And what I see is that human evolution, or this garden that we're in, because I believe we're a garden that is now coming to a point of harvest, that the harvest moves backwards along that point, along that pathway of awareness. It goes from physical through the mental and through the emotional. And the physical we can think of as sort of our cave development, where we're just looking for security and safety and food and warmth. And then we go through a mental development in which we develop tools, and now we have Apple Mac and iPod. We've got all our tools. But now we're going through what is in an emotional development. And the emotional development is the awakening of the heart. And unless the heart is awoken, we cannot comprehend the vibrational, which many may use the word spiritual, but to me I prefer the word vibrational because the word spiritual is very tainted by many beliefs and religions. But we're now approaching the ability to be aware of the vibrational while we're in the world of matter. And the being aware of the vibrational is having the capacity to feel it. And so we're now going through a procedure which my insight is that we began in about 1999, and we'll have a 13-year period in which there's a window of opportunity for us to develop our emotional capacity. And unless we develop our emotional capacity, which means integrating our emotional imprinting that has been passed from generation to generation to generation, unless we develop our emotional capacity, we don't have the capacity to contain the vibrational. And so for me, the most important work at the moment is to resolve these emotional obstructions that are preventing the awareness of the vibrational coming through, and then opening ourselves up to this vibrational awareness, which happens very quickly once we realize that is our sole responsibility.
Yes. I think you summed that up with one of what I would call some profound statements that you made when you said there is nowhere to go and nothing to do, but there is everything to be.
Yes. To me, that is... because I love the teachings of Jesus, although I'm completely, I find churchianity nauseating. To me, that is one of the greatest teachers, and one of his greatest teachers was to say, we're going to go through a period where, as a planet, we're going to become crucified. And when we become crucified, what that means is we realize that the only place left to go is into the heart. And the only way to enter the heart of the matter is to feel authentically what's going on in our emotional body and feel it, be with those feelings without placing a condition on them. And only being without condition, which is another way of saying unconditional love, being without condition enables these emotional blockages that have been passed from generation to generation to come to a point of resolution. And we can't use our hands to do that. And we can't use our legs to take us anywhere to do that, because our busyness with our hands and where we're running all over the place, that busyness is keeping us from feeling what's really going on. So when we realize our hands can't help us and our feet can't help us, we might as well nail them down. We're now officially crucified, and we have to be with what's going on in an unconditional way. And only if we're able to accomplish that will we raise ourselves from the boredom into the kingdom, which always surrounds us, but we can't perceive with our mental eyes or our physical eyes. We have to perceive it with the eyes of the heart, which are our real eyes. We have to realize this kingdom.
Yeah. What you said there suggests to me that your book called Alchemy of the Heart covers a lot of what you've just spoken about.
Yes. Alchemy of the Heart takes, whereas the presence process is an experiential, it's an invitation into an experience. It's a 10-week journey that the reader can go on, which will take them, will teach them how to use their life as their teaching, their life experience as their teaching. The Alchemy of the Heart is a different journey. It's a perceptual journey, and it's a very easy read. It enables the reader to go on a journey from the moment of their birth into their adult state of being physically transfixed and seeing the world as something happening to you. And then it takes them from that journey and returns into the journey of authenticity, integrity, and intimacy, in which we start to realize how the world happens through us and not to us. And we can make that journey perceptually to show ourselves that the causal point of our experience is the heart. And then once someone has read that, then it's up to them whether they want to take responsibility for what's happening in their heart or not.
Yes. By the way, you originally informed me that book should be out in the spring. Has it actually come out now?
The Alchemy of the Heart is now available on Amazon.com. It's available through Namaste Publishing. And as far as I know, it is during this month that book is going to be on the shelves everywhere in Barnes & Noble, etc., etc.
Right. Yeah. Speaking to you so far, it does seem that through your four books there is some kind of central theme that you have in mind, and each one seems to develop aspects of what you've already spoken or written.
Yes. I take... the writing doesn't come out of thinking. My writing comes out of my experience. My turning point in my life was when I realized the true teaching of, you know, we get given the teaching, you know, from Christianity tells us that Jesus said, I am the light, I am the way, none come to the Father but through me. And that's interpreted by the church that we have to follow that person's experience, and that person's experience is the truth and ours is invalid. And my turning point came to me when I realized that that is a misinterpretation, and that what that teacher was trying to say to me was, Michael, your experience is the light, your experience is the way, and unless you embrace your experience as the absolute truth for you, you cannot enter vibrational awareness while you're in the world of matter. And the moment I embraced my experience as my truth and took it on as my soul teacher, then everything started to transform for me, and I started getting massive amounts of insight through my experience. And what I do is I write my books through my experience, not through thinking about it, but what I do is I do presentations, I work one-on-one with people, I share what's happening in my experience, I watch what happens in theirs, and out of the direct experience, then I take and I write the book. So the first book comes out of 9 years of journeying, of being with many teachers and watching what they're doing and learning from them, and then working one-on-one with hundreds of people in South Africa through this process, and then I wrote that book. And then I came to the States, and I started to do a presentation to place the heart, you know, because we live in the mental body realm. This is the world of the mental body, of the male-dominated mental body, where we believe that thought creates and that God is somehow a thought. And so in this environment, I started to do a presentation to say, listen, let's give the heart a chance, because it's the heart, is the heart of the matter here. And as I did that presentation with people, I found a way to show people that the heart was the causal point of their experience and how they are to approach that. And out of that, a year and a half of presentations and working one-on-one with people, I wrote The Alchemy of the Heart.
Yes. Now, you speak quite a lot about present moment awareness.
Yes.
So, what is it?
Present moment awareness to me is taking my current experience as it is right now as being absolutely valid. In other words, my causal point for my experience, because I know that the emotional body, I've proved it to myself that the emotional body is the causal point of the quality of my experience. In other words, my feeling body is valid. My thinking is not necessarily valid because it tells us it's a story. And my physical circumstance may reflect memories back to me. But what is valid to me is what I'm feeling. So if I'm feeling confused, I allow myself to be completely present with that and to digest that. I don't try and change my confusion. I don't try and tell myself that I'm supposed to be clear. I don't try and tell myself I'm supposed to be at peace. I completely trust what's happening in the feeling body. What I found is that many spiritual paths and many religions say to us, your experience is invalid. You should be having this nirvana experience, or you should be having this heaven experience. And so for me, what present moment awareness is saying, no, that's not so. The experience that's most valid is the one I'm having now. And whatever I'm feeling now is valid. And if I feel this without condition, then out of that experience of adding love to my experience, I receive all the insight and revelation I require to move in my journey. And so that's what I really mean by present moment awareness experience. It's about training ourselves to enter each moment that we're in as fully as possible, because it's my insight, it's a vibrational, or what others may call the spiritual realm, is speaking to us directly in each moment, but it speaks through the felt perception. It doesn't speak, you know, that's its direct link with us, is we feel these vibrations, and if our feeling body is shut down, then we're going to go and try and think about these things and do things to try and make this happen, whereas all that's required is to open our feeling capacity, start feeling the vibrations, and trust those vibrations that are coming to us in each moment, that is our daily bread, and we receive our daily bread in every moment by the feelings that come to us, and we are to digest that by being with those vibrations without placing conditions on them. And as we digest them, the nutrition is that our being is enlivened and we receive all the insight and revelation designed specifically for the path that we are individually on.
Yes. Well, I think you summed that up nicely by saying in your book that we should be able to respond consciously to every experience we are having.
Yes. In other words, the difference between a reaction and a response is when I react, the feelings that are going on in the moment, I kind of vomit them out into the world. I project them outward by telling stories about what I'm feeling and then acting on these stories, and these stories are usually untrue. And then I act on these stories, and specifically if I'm interpreting these feelings as fear, anger, and grief, because we always call our feelings something, and if we feel something that's unfamiliar, then we're going to give it a name like fear, anger, and grief, or confusion. And if I start telling myself a story about why I'm feeling that, and then acting out of that story, my behavior is never going to serve me. It's going to be self-destructive and destructive to those around me. But if I respond to my experience, what I am is I'm allowing myself to feel those feelings. I'm doing my best not to enter a story. And I'm taking responsibility for those feelings and rather allowing those feelings to take me into my heart center and to bring insight to me. And the behavior that comes out of that behavior is not a behavior of blame or vengeance or anger. It's a different sort of behavior. It's a behavior that is helpful to me on my journey and it adds to the journeys of those people around me.
Yes. I think another statement of yours that I very much liked was saying that the best part is realizing that we have been looking for something that has already found us.
Absolutely. Yes. Actually, that statement comes from Jim Morrison of The Doors.
Oh, right, yeah.
He sang it, I think on the American Prayer album, he said, we're looking for something that has already found us. And for me, one of the biggest revelations about that is that, as I was saying to you, we're all receiving our daily bread. There is two types of food available to us. The one is the food for the body and for the activities in the world, and that's the solid food that we eat. But we receive another sort of food that is given to us from the vibrational, and that food comes to us as feelings. And if we don't know that these strange feelings we receive all through the day are actually our food, we tend to spit them out. But when we start allowing ourselves to feel what we're feeling without placing conditions on it, we will discover that everything we've been looking for, the nutrition, the soul food, you can think of it, is being given to us all the time. All that we're required to do is digest it. For many of us, we're like a child that keeps spitting out the food that the mother is giving the child. And if a child keeps spitting out the food, it becomes weak and confused and deranged. But the moment that child starts swallowing the food, it immediately starts to feel well, become healthy, and enlivened its state of being. And the moment we start to digest the aspects of our heart, that are the food that's coming to us through our heart, which is the felt resonance of our experience, we immediately start to feel that our being is enlivened, to receive insight, revelation, and then our life experience becomes validated, and then we're moving around on purpose.
In this presence process, does our ego come into it at all? I mean, does it need clearing or attending to?
I'm not one of those who find the ego is a problem, because to me the ego is my appearance, my behavior, and my life circumstances. So it's those trinities, my appearance, my behavior, and my life circumstances. In other words, everything that makes me a different expression of the vibrational to you is what I call my ego. Now, the problem is when I use that aspect of my being just to feed myself and I run around like a completely independent aspect of the universe and behave completely separately without any awareness of anybody else, and I use those aspects of my experience just to serve myself only, then that's like a cell in a body that just acts on its own, and we call that, in the body, we would call that cancer.
Yes.
But when I realize that my behavior, my appearance, and my life circumstance is an expression of the vibrational, and that it's a means for me to grow and to contribute to the growth of all those around me, then I attribute everything that is happening through those to the vibrational. And when I make that, when I attribute everything to the vibrational, then my ego has become an attribute. So for me, it's not about destroying the ego. It's about enabling the ego to reach its highest potential, which is to be an attribute of the vibrational.
Yes. You've spoken about waking into the fullest potential of each moment that is already destined. What did you mean by that it's already destined? I mean, do you believe that we have, for example, life contracts where certain experiences are put in our path?
Well, I see us all as having a very separate experience from each other, an experience that is coming out of our emotional imprint. So, for example, I'll give you an indicator of that. If I walk into work and I see my boss and he reminds me of my stepfather who I had a difficult relationship with, and I reflect this off my boss, and so I start getting annoyed with my boss because he's reflecting my stepfather,
yeah.
Then I'm seeing something that's not there. I'm seeing an illusion. I no longer see my boss who's really there in front of me. And the moment I start behaving around my boss as if it was my stepfather, then I'm delusional. And so that's just an example of, as we go through life, we each individually are seeing the world through the lens of the fear, anger, and grief that is imprinted into our emotional body. And so we are having a personal interpretation of life that has nothing really to do with what's actually going on in the world. Once I clear those imprints in my emotional body, I will realize that I'm not here to try and change things. I'm not right here to force my will on things, to do things that I feel better. That actually there is something that's unfolding. There is a divine plan that's unfolding, if I could just see it and participate in it. And so that's what I'm talking about, that there is a will that's unfolding. There is a will for us. And for me, it's not about being perfect, it's about participating. And the place that I participate in it is my heart will tell me what part to play in that through the insights it gives me through my feeling body. So
yes.
So it's about moving out of that that illusionary will of myself that's coming out of my fear, anger, and grief, and really out of the will of the universe, which is actually a loving will that is unfolding for us all.
Mm. Very expansive. You said there are no failures in the presence process, as it is an individual journey, and you go on to say that it is not an end to anything, it is the continuation of a lifelong journey that we have already been making into the heart of our own present moment awareness.
Right.
I think that's a very potent statement.
Yes, well, if anyone who comes into the heart work will come into it as a continuation of what they've already been in. The presence process, or any genuine heart work, doesn't ask us to step on any new path. What it does is it takes our life experience up to that point and shows us how to integrate those experiences we've already been having. And in fact, all the experiences that bring us up to the moment that we're in are absolutely invalid for our continuation of our journey. So it's not about rejecting our past. It's about integrating it. It's not about stepping on a new path. It's about recognizing the path that we're already walking, because every human being is walking a path that has been given to them. Their life experience is given to them so that they may evolve. And while I'm looking for an experience other than the one I'm having, while I'm rejecting the life experience that I've had up to now, I'm unable to take my life experience as valid, and therefore I'm unable to accept the path that I'm already on, which is the one that is given to me as a gift through which I may fully awaken.
Yeah. Well,
so the
presence
process, Yeah, the presence process is not going to take us into anything new. The nature of heart work is it enables us to integrate what's already going on.
Yeah. I think that's a very good point you've made there, that you're saying, in effect, accept your experiences in life and see the value in them.
Well, the very important thing is to be able to read them. And I think if we cannot read our experience, and if we have been indoctrinated into believing we should be having another experience, and if we haven't integrated the fear, anger, and grief within our emotional body, and so are spending our life trying to feel better from what's going on, it's very difficult for us to turn inward and say, what's happening to me is supposed to be happening. So there are many challenges between, you know, what's happening to us and embracing our experience, because all our religions and most of our spiritual paths tell us that something else should be going on other than what is. And so we're almost indoctrinated to reject our life experience. But to me, that's the greatest sadness, because everyone has been given a life experience deliberately designed and tailored for what's required to enable them to evolve. And all the ingredients for their evolution is in their life experience and is to be seen through all the experiences they've had up to this moment. And what the heart work enables a person to realize that, and when I use the word realize, I mean our real eyes, not our physical eyes that are, it's hard to see that when we look at our life physically, and not what I call our anal eyes, which is when we analyze everything that we're doing and we get very mental about trying to understand. We have to use our real eyes to see our life path. And the real eyes are the eyes of the heart.
I totally agree with your comments there. You speak of people living with the ghosts of the past. Now, in getting rid of those, would you talk of forgiveness of self and then of others who you believe have hurt you?
Well, there really only is forgiveness of the self. Because when I can authentically forgive myself, then I forgive the whole world. I first have to look in on myself and comprehend why I have behaved the way I've behaved up to this moment. And when I look into my own life experience and I see the imprinting of my first 7 years, and I see the fear, anger, and grief that has been passed from generation to generation to generation, and that is now in my emotional body, and how this discomfort has driven me into behaviors of sedation and control, behaviors that have been self-destructive to myself and to those around me. And then when I go into my emotional body and I actually do the work to integrate those emotional signatures and I see how it releases me of that behavior, what is there not to forgive myself for? And when I see that about myself and release myself from that predicament, everyone is in the same boat. So the moment I see that about myself and forgive myself of that, in other words, give myself that love, which is the being with those states without condition so they can move to resolution, I automatically forgive the world. Because if I am driven by this emotional imprinting into these self-destructive behaviors, then every other human being is too. And if I am able to be awakened by my heart to resolve that, then that capacity is in everybody else. And I trust that they will enter that experience when they're ready. There's no need to hold anything against anybody.
Yes, indeed, yes. I agree with that. You have said the presence process is not an end to anything. It is the continuation of a lifelong journey that we have already been making into the heart of our own present moment awareness.
Right.
I think that also is a very powerful statement you've made there.
Well, one of my insights is that this emotional work, this awakening is really about arriving in the moment. This great teacher Jesus said the kingdom is now at hand, and yet many of us don't experience it, and it's all around us. And so one of the unfolding at the moment is developing the capacity to realize we're already dead. We've now got to raise ourselves from the dead, and really, you know, we always write it on people's tombstones, you know, RIP, rest in peace. But we have to be able to now teach ourselves how to rest in peace while we're in this world. But we can't do that until we can realize what peace is. And then while our emotional body is shut down, we believe peace is something we have to make. And you'll see that our leaders go around trying to make peace by rearranging physical circumstances, by saying, you shut up so that I can be at peace, and if you don't shut up, I'll send people in so that we can be at peace. Because it's a belief that peace is a physical circumstance. Yeah. Then we have other organizations that believe peace is a mental concept. So they say, you bring your agreement and I'll bring my agreement, and we'll talk about it until we agree, and then we'll sign on the dotted line and there shall be peace. But peace is not an arrangement or an agreement. Peace is actually a vibration. And the vibration can only be perceived by feeling peace. That's why we say, I feel at peace. But if my feeling body is underdeveloped or is not yet evolved, I can't feel peace, and therefore I think about it and try and do things. And we're in a moment now. For me, what present moment, entering the present is about, what this 2012 is about, what this time of harvest is about developing the capacity to realize the vibrations that are already all around us. The peace is already here. For example, there is peace in Iraq right now. And it's very easy to see that, because if we removed all the human beings, we'd see how what a peaceful place it is. It's completely already at peace. So it's not about making peace. It's about realizing what is obscuring our awareness of peace, which is these unintegrated emotional conditions. These ancient memories are, for example, Iraq, those are memories of the war of, between the Persians and the Christians. Yeah. It's been going along for a long time.
Yes.
And what's obstructing the peace, and then removing those obstructions within ourselves by integrating our emotional body. And as I stop suppressing my fear, anger, and grief, and allow myself to feel that by being with it without placing conditions on it, I automatically awaken my capacity to feel.
Yeah.
And as I awaken my capacity to feel, I feel the peace that is already all around me, and I stop having to enter mental ideas or physical behaviors to try and make peace. I now realize peace. And to me, that is the invitation, is to be in the world but not of it. In other words, to realize the fullness of the vibration while I'm in the world of matter. And that is the invitation to all of humanity at the moment.
That's great. I think that's a very good point you've finished on there, because we only have a few minutes left now. Are you open to inquiries via your email address, in which case would you like to give it out?
Yes, I would encourage the listeners to explore my website. It is a free website. The only two things there that you purchase are the two books, which are through publishers, so they are purchased. But everything else on my website is free. There's free articles, there's free audios. And on that website is my email address for anyone who would like to write to me. And the website is The Presence Portal, which is spelled P-O-R-T-A-L. If they just type in The Presence Portal into any search program, they will find that website and they can explore that. And it will support anybody who is wanting to take responsibility for their experience by integrating their emotional condition. And it's not that we have to open to our heart. The heart is open. I mean, it's not that we have to open our heart. The heart is already open. It's just time for us to open to the heart. And this work will help us to accomplish that.
Can you repeat that address for my benefit? And I'll write this down. And when I do the archive report, I'll put that in there in case anybody misses it.
It's www.thepresence.com. Portal.com.
Theprisonportal.com.
Yeah, the presence.
Is that P-R-I-S-O-N or P-R-I-S-N?
No, we don't want any more prisons.
No.
P-R-E-S-E-N-C-E, presence.
Oh, present, right, okay. Well, it's just as well I asked you that.
Yes. We don't want any more
prisons. The present portal, all one word, .com.
Yeah, we don't need a prison portal.
Right, no. Well, that's why I queried it, yes. Well, that's excellent. You're a very good speaker, and you obviously know exactly what you're talking about, and I should think you must be extremely busy churning these books out at such a rate. I hope they're very successful for you. I've got about a minute and a half left now, Michael, so I'm going to say thank you very much for coming on the programme, and then I shall tell our listeners who we've got coming along next Friday. So thank you very much, Michael. Maybe in the near future, after your next book is out, perhaps we should have you back again and find out what else you're doing.
Thank you, Michael, very much.
It's
been a great conversation with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, yes. Right, well, that I thought that was an excellent interview. Next week, I've got Laurie Daniel Falk coming on. She does some wonderful work with angels. She's an angel artist. She channels from angels and guides. She's known as a spiritual life coach and also a contemporary mystic. And her work runs the gamut from traditional psychology to mystical rituals. She's got a lot to offer. She's a very busy lady. She's the founder of the Crystalline Institute, which is an organisation designed to bring spirituality into everyday life. So she does sound a very interesting lady. I believe she actually does angelic message portraits. So I hope you can be with me on that one. Thank you for being with me today. God bless you all. Thank you.